and let us just see what has happened so far.
From verses 4 to 10 in chapter 9, Krishna spoke about the infinite goal, which is Brahman or Moksha, whatever you want to call it, that is the infinite goal. But the problem is, until we do not come to this infinite goal, we will choose all kind of finite goals or destinations. And unfortunately, the problem with finite goals is they do not give us permanent peace of mind, security, and therefore our struggle to find this happiness continues on and on and on. How long it continues? For generations, for millions of years, it has been continuing on. So therefore, in verse number 12, then Krishna said, who are the people who do not understand or do not come to this higher form of Ishvara? See, a simple method to understand this is, supposing there is a white light, and if you take this white light, and there is a prism here, right? Prism, P-R-I-S-M, prism. And if this white light is reflected throughout through the prism, what do you get on this side? You get seven rainbow of colors. Now, if you are standing on this side and you don't see the white light and you don't see the prism, what do you see? You see the rainbow of colors, which is very attractive, which draws your attention. This is the same situation. God is the white light, the pure light. When he reflects into this creation, that is the prism, we, the human beings standing on this side of the creation, do not realize the purity of the white light. What do we see? We see the entire creation made up of various colors, sizes, forms, shapes, etc. And thus we are attracted to this wonderful rainbow of colors. That is called Maya. That is what is called Maya. Our mind is so much focused on this rainbow that we lose the very source of the rainbow, that is the pure white light. So here Krishna says in verse number 12, the people who have a deluded knowledge, moga jnana, whose knowledge itself is not correct. Their knowledge is only to chase after finite objects. When the knowledge is incorrect, therefore what happens? Moga asa, their desires also are incorrect. When the desires are also incorrect, moga karmano, that means their actions also will be incorrect. So, he talks about this one type of majority of people with wrong knowledge, wrong desires, wrong action, who pursue the finite objects in the world. Then in verses 13, 14 and 15, he spoke about the other group of people who, because of their past punyam, they have come to accept God as the ultimate goal, the finite goal. And thus, even though they have many worldly goals, it is not that these people have abandoned all worldly goals. They are married people, they have children, they have a career, etc. But these are all considered as secondary goals. They never lose sight of the primary goal in their life, which is moksha, which is God. So, spirituality is not meant for those people to run away and seek some kind of God in a cave or in a temple or in an ashram. It is meant for people of society like us who are engaged in the world and yet do not lose track of the primary goal called God. Right? That's why the Gita was given to no other than Arjuna, who is a man of action, right on the battlefield. Where is our battlefield? Life is a battlefield, isn't it? That is what life is. It is a battlefield. So, in verses 13, 14 and 15, Krishna spoke about the importance of devotion. And then we saw that in verse 15, our devotion also can go through three different levels. That is, we start generally with a devotion to a particular deity, Eka Rupa Ishvara or Eka Rupa Bhakti, a devotion to a particular deity, be it Ganesha, Shiva, Krishna, etc., or maybe a multiple of deities. So our devotion is limited to a god with form in a particular one or few deities. Then he says, you have to rise to the level of Aneka Rupa Ishvara. To realize that this god that you are worshipping is not only in the deities, in the temple, in the altar, but this same God is available everywhere in creation. So therefore, Aneka Rupa Bhakti is where we can worship God in anything in creation, be it a stone, be it a tree, be it a cow, whatever it is. And then finally he says you come to Arupa Ishvara or Arupa Bhakti, whereby you can worship the unmanifest God. So since we have to go through three levels, and majority of us will be at which level? Eka Rupa Bhakti, isn't it? So first we have to rise from Eka Rupa to Aneka Rupa. So in verses 16 to 20, he gives us some examples on how we can expand our vision of God to see this Ishvara in everything in creation. Very practical things in creation, he will give us some examples. So we have looked at verse number 16 last week when he said, Aham Kratur, which is a ritual that is performed, a certain type of rituals which are given in the scriptures. So these are ancient rituals. So he is also talking about those rituals also, Aham Kratur. Then he talks about Aham Yajna. Yajna are more common rituals that we perform, like the fire ritual. And in the fire ritual that we perform, generally our attitude is what? What is our attitude when we perform any ritual? Not only you expect something, but you are performing the ritual as a prayer to God, isn't it? As an offering to God. But here he wants us to change our vision now. He says the very ritual itself is God. See God in every aspect of the ritual. Where? He says, Swada Aham. When we perform rituals, Swada Aham, when we perform rituals to our ancestors, whatever we offer to our ancestors is called Swada. So he says, in that offering you made to ancestors, see me in the offerings also. So therefore, every aspect of ritual we are performing, we must learn to realize that, because we say God is all-pervading. What do we mean by God is all-pervading? He is everywhere. Therefore, he should be in every aspect of our ritual. Our ritual is not an offering to God. Our ritual is God itself in every aspect of the ritual. So, Swada Aham, which is offerings made to ancestors, see me in that also. Aham Aushadam. Aushadam is, as we discussed last week, means plant. And these plants which are eaten by humans, and also in those days food used to be consumed only for three reasons, and that is for nourishing the body, curing diseases, curing disease and protection against any disease also. So that's why food was called aushadam, meaning medicine. And I told you about the prayer in chapter 15, verse 13, which can be used as a prayer before we take any medicine. So it divinizes the medicines that we take also. Before you take any medicine, just recite this prayer from chapter 15, verse 13. Okay? So therefore, everything, the food that we eat in the annam also, Lord is there. Right? And that's why, in fact, eating also can be turned into a totally religious or spiritual experience. When Lord is in the food, where else is Lord besides the food? Our digestive system that helps us to consume that food, also Lord is there in the digestive system. Chapter 15, verse 15, which we use as a food prayer also. Before we eat any food, we say that prayer before we eat any food. It says that Lord is the digestive fire in us also. So the whole act of eating also becomes very spiritual when we eat. Eating is not just to satisfy the senses, but eating itself can be turned into a whole spiritual experience. When we realize the presence of God everywhere, the digestive system is God, the annam, the food is God, the whole process is God. Then he says, mantra aham, whatever mantras we chant, in that mantra is not an offering, is not an offering to God. In that mantra itself, God is there. Because mantra is so auspicious. It invokes God. So God says, I am in the mantra also, mantra aham. That's why when we eat also, the whole process of eating in Sanskrit is called prana agni hotram. Prana agni hotram. So you don't just call eating eating. Eating in Sanskrit is called prana agni hotram. Why? Because when we eat, there is the air particle prana that helps to push the food downwards. Then when the food reaches the stomach, agni is there. Agni fire combined with air, there is combustion, there is what we call digestion. If there is lack of air or if there is not enough of fire, there cannot be combustion or there cannot be what we call digestion of food. So the whole act of eating is prana agni hotram. It's like a hotram. You're offering something into the fire. We call that hotram, right? The food you're offering into your fire, which is the digestive system. So the whole act of eating becomes hotram. Sorry, prana agni hotram. Then he said, aham eva ajyam. Ajyam is the clarified butter, the ghee that we offer into the fire. So in that also Krishna says, see my presence there. I am all pervading. In that ghee also you're offering, recognize the presence. Aham agnir, the fire which is receiving all your oblations. In that fire also, I am there also. And that's why I told you it's very important when you do the havan, where should you put the grains? In the fire. Why should you put in the fire? Because the flame represents Agni Devata and your prayers are offered to Agni Devata. Agni Devata takes it to the Ishvara. So if you keep on throwing your grains here and there everywhere but except the fire, your prayers will come to of no effect at all. So we must put it right into Agni Devata. That Agni Devata is the courier service that carries our prayers to God. So here Krishna says, Agni itself, I am, my presence is there in the fire. Therefore, this should open up our realization while we are doing any ritual that God is present everywhere in the ritual. The mantras I'm chanting, the fire, the offerings I'm making, everything I see and I experience or realize the presence of divinity there. And finally, he says, aham hutam. Hutam is the actual action of offering. So whatever action we are doing of offering, whether ghee or grains or whatever we are offering, the very action itself, the presence of Lord is there. That means what? The person performing the action itself is also Ishvara also. So every aspect of our ritual, we should not look upon it only as an offering to Ishvara, but if we look upon it deeply, we should realize the presence of Ishvara everywhere in our rituals also. And even if we don't do rituals, how can we bring this experience into our daily life? A very simple thing, like cooking. Even cooking can be turned into a spiritual experience. How? The fire that cooks your food is Ishvara. The food in the food that you are cooking also is Ishvara also. So even a simple act of cooking, whatever we are doing, we can turn everything into a spiritual experience. That means you can realize that is called Aneka Rupa Ishvara. You can see God everywhere. I even read recently somebody, one Swamiji was saying, even your walking you can turn into a spiritual experience. How? You go to the park and walk. He said even that walk you can turn into a spiritual experience. You know how? Walk in the shape of an eight. That's what she's saying. See, when we go around the temple, what we call it? Pradakshina. So what is your walk? It is the whole world is a temple of God. Your walk is like a pradakshina. It is like walking around the temple. So when we get that experience, even our walk can be turned into a beautiful spiritual exercise. Thinking this temple, this park is your world of God, is a temple of God, and I am doing pradakshina. Every action we can bring this attitude of the realization, the presence of God in our lives. How beautiful will our mind be? How composed and calm will our mind be? rather than when if you are cooking, and if you are cooking in anger, what happens? Say, my husband, my daddy did this morning, and you put something in, and what are you doing? You are putting anger into the food, isn't it? So better think of Ishvara while you are cooking, while you are walking. Every activity can be divinized. Okay? Ishvara is everywhere. Okay. Verse 17, he gives us some more examples. So in everything, not only in the fire rituals we do, in our parents, mother, father, everywhere we can realize the presence of Ishvara. So here he says, Aham Asya Jagata Pita Mata Pita Maha. Aham Asya, of this, Asya means of this, Jagata, of this whole world, I am Pita, I am the father, I am Mata, I am the mother, and I am Pita Maha, I am the grandfather also. Because the father and mother have got to come from somewhere. Right, so all the way, the origin, I am the father of this creation, I am the mother of this creation. That's why actually there is no gender for Lord. Although we say he all the time. But actually God is no gender. Because it is a combination of Prakriti and Purusha that creates the whole world. So there is a male and female aspect. So God is basically both the male and female aspect. So here he says, I am the father of the creation, I am the mother of the creation, Mata, and I am also Pita Maha, I am the grandfather of the creation. Meaning what? In short, to understand, because then somebody will ask them, who is the Lord's grandfather? So if you go backward and backward, that's why it just stops there. So what he's trying to say, I am the causeless cause of creation. Nothing has caused God to come into creation. God was there before the creation. He is the causeless cause of creation. Womb and seed, male and female aspect, both He is. Purusha, what we call Purusha and Prakriti. So, in the same way also, we look upon our parents also as the very embodiment of God also. Mata, Pita, Devo, as they say. Mata, Pita is the, what we call, we look upon as God in them also. So that is one. He also identifies himself as, if you look at the second line, Data. Data means nourisher. Now what do we mean by nourisher here? The word nourisher here means, he is the one who dispenses all the punyam and papam according to your own actions. So whatever actions you do are recorded, whether it is punyam or papam, and Lord is the one who maintains this whole law of karma. So just like He maintains the law of gravity, the law of creation, the law of karma also, He is the one who maintains the order of the law of karma. So every action does not go without reward or punishment. Whether if not in this life, definitely it happens in next life. So I don't know whether you remember the story I told you, when sometimes you read in the papers, somebody is jailed for a crime, then he's sent to jail for 30-40 years. Then after 40 years, they discover that he did not commit the crime. Somebody else committed the crime. But by the time, he's already 60-70 years old. Then we say, what kind of justice is this? The poor fellow suffered in jail for 40 years, and then later they realize somebody else did the crime. But then if you look at it, this is the play of the law of karma. This person may have committed a crime in the past janma, but got away from it. But somewhere along the way, the law of karma catches up with you and you have to pay for it. So the law of karma is perfect, the way it works. And Lord says, I am the Data. That's why He is called Karma Phala Data. He allocates whatever punyam or papam for you in this life. Because you have so much of punyam, so much of papam. In one birth, you cannot complete everything. So whatever is to be allocated for you to for punyam or papam, He is the one who allocates. So He is also known as Data also. Sustains and nourishes the whole creation also. Vedyam. Vedyam means the one to be known, the ultimate destination. In chapter 13, in fact, he uses another word called Gyeyam. Gyeyam means the object of knowledge. All the knowledge that we are learning today is taking us towards only one objective. That is the God that is to be known, the highest, the unmanifest. So here he says, I am that Vedyam, the goal of all spiritual seekers, Param Brahma. Another example of his presence he gives is Pavitram. He is the purifier. Pavitram means the greatest purifier, because in anything that is sacred helps to purify us. Example, fire. When we use fire in the ceremonies, it helps to purify the spiritual practice. Taking a dip in the Ganges helps us to purify also. But we must understand, it does not wash away our previous sins. It is supposed to purify us so that after we come out from the dip, we are supposed to change our life. It is supposed to wash the dirt away from our mind. So Lord says, I am the purifier. Even when we recite mantras, what's the purpose of reciting mantras? He purifies the mind. So whenever we invoke God, He is the greatest purifier. Purifies our mind, purifies the body, purifies the intellect. Study of the scriptures helps us to purify the intellect. Therefore, Lord says, I am Pavitram, the great purifier. And I am Omkara. Omkara is the Om syllable. Right? And what is the specialty of the Om syllable? It is said in our scriptures that when the Vedas are very extensive, Vedas are thousands and thousands of verses. When the Vedas needed to be compressed and given to mankind, because not everybody got a time to go and chant all the way, the four Vedas. So in order to help us to chant, so the Vedas were condensed into, you know what the Vedas were condensed into? Four Vedas were condensed into what? If you cannot chant the Vedas, there's one very simple chant. What? Gayatri Mantra. Gayatri Mantra is the condensation of the Vedas. Lord Brahma, when he wanted to condense, later in chapter 11 we'll be discussing this, each Veda, Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, was condensed into one line of the Gayatri. So chanting the Gayatri is equivalent to chanting the Vedas. And then again, the Gayatri Mantra itself was condensed again to Om symbol. So Om expanded is, if you chant Om, you are chanting Gayatri. If you chant Gayatri, you are chanting Vedas. Vedas condensed is Gayatri, Gayatri condensed is Om. So Om itself, or we meditate on Om, or we chant the word Om, is basically a condensation of the Gayatri Mantra, and the Gayatri Mantra is a condensation of the four Vedas. So Om is a single syllable, Om. Then he says, I am also the Rig, Shama and Yajur, the three Vedas. Rig Veda, Sama Veda, Yajur Vedas. In all the three Vedas also, I am there. Later on in chapter 15, he will say, I am the author of the Vedas and I am the knower of the Vedas. So, the Vedas themselves are called, the very presence of God is in the Vedas. Now, what is the difference? Rig Veda is mantras. It is a form of poetry. The verses of Rig Vedas are given to us in the form of poetry. In the Yajur Veda, the mantras are given in prose form. Okay? So Rig Veda is poetry, Yajur Veda is prose form, Sama Veda is mantras set to music. That's why Sama Veda is sung. It's a very melodious, among all the Vedas, the Sama Veda is the most melodious Veda. So there are three types of Vedas with three different types of mantras used in rituals and rites. Now, one of course will want to question, why is the Atharva Veda not mentioned? Why he only says Rig, Shama, Yajur and Atharva Veda is missing? What is the reason for that? The fourth Veda is missing. It came later, no doubt, it's true. Why is the other reason that this fourth Veda is not mentioned? Compared to all the four Vedas, the Atharva Veda deals with worldly activities. Example, fortune telling. Ayurveda, treatment of diseases and all that. Warfare. So only the three Vedas, Rig, Sama and Yajur, have got rituals and prayers. Whereas Atharva Veda does not deal with all this. It deals with worldly activities. So that's why here it is not mentioned. So all the mantras we chant, all the rituals we do come from the three Vedas, Rig, Sama and Yajurveda. Okay? Atharva mainly contains about Ayurveda, fortune telling, etc. also. Okay? So now we look at verse number 18. Now, when we talk about bhakti, one thing we must be very clear about, the word bhakti. Bhakti to most of us means devotion. But in Bhagavad Gita, bhakti is given a very deep meaning when we come to chapter 12. But if you understand a little bit now, bhakti goes through three levels. At karma level also there must be bhakti. There must be devotion or love for God. Otherwise, whatever karma actions we do, without devotion or love for God, just becomes karma. When karma has bhakti in it, it becomes karma yoga. So that is the level that we go through is karma lakshana bhakti. Lakshana means, what is the translation of lakshana? Lakshana means like the character. Is it the character? Quality, yeah. So, karma with the quality of bhakti in it. Karma, lakshana, bhakti. Then we come to the second level. Now, karma, lakshana, bhakti is explained in the first six chapters of the Gita. Chapters 1 to 6. Chapters 7 to 12, they talk about bhakti, but what type of bhakti? Upasana, lakshana, bhakti. That devotion, upasana, the prayers, when we meditate on God, that is called upasana, must also have the flavor of bhakti in it. So that's called upasana lakshana bhakti. That is chapters 7 to 12. Chapters 13 to 18 is jnana lakshana bhakti. Jnana means the knowledge we study also must have the element of love for God, also devotion for God. Otherwise the study becomes a mechanical study. So in chapter 12, Krishna will take us through five levels of bhakti. How we can progress from one level right up to the highest level. So we have to keep in mind that when we talk about bhakti, we are talking about three different levels. Karma, upasana and jnanam also. So secondly, bhakti is a means of liberation. When we say bhakti is a means of liberation, we must not take it to mean that devotion is the means of liberation. Devotion in action, devotion in worship, devotion in knowledge. All three must be there. That is what will lead us to liberation also. So now, keep this in mind. We look at now verse number 18. What else is Vishwarupa Ishvara Darshanam, where Lord says, see me in all these things. So here we have the word Gati. The first word in verse number 18, Gati. Gati means the fruit of our action. Whatever action we do, there is always outcome. Karma phalam. Every karma we do, there is a karma phalam. So Lord says, in the karma phalam also see my presence. Now what does it mean to us? Every action I do, I get a result. Lord says, see me in the result. So what does it mean to us practically? How can we apply this practically in our lives?
Be happy with what you get.
So, if it is favorable, thank you God. If it is unfavorable, thank you God. Because why he says, see me in both favorable and unfavorable situation. Why? Because he is the one who is dispensing the karma phala. Earlier we said he is the karma phala data. He is the one who is dispensing whatever good we are receiving, whatever bad we are receiving, in that see the presence of God. As I said also a few weeks back, things that come into our life come in for two reasons. Either something comes in as a blessing or it comes as a lesson to us. If it comes as a blessing, thank God for it. If it comes to us, which is not a blessing, then at least learn something from it. So either take it as a blessing or take it as a lesson. That is the only way we will grow spiritually, rather than we keep on worrying and worrying and worrying about it. So here he says, see me in the fruit of your actions. And therefore, both I am success is God, failure also see the hand of God. Whatever he is giving you is fair and just, based according to your own actions. So accept both failure and success. Do not be affected by it, but learn to accept that it has come from God also. Then he says, I am Bharata. Bharata means a nourisher. Nourisher means the only real source of happiness. He is the one who can provide for us all the source of happiness at all three levels. Physical level, mental level, intellectual level. At all three levels, he nourishes the happiness in us. So he is the ultimate nourisher. Prabhu. Prabhu means he is the master. The master of the whole creation. Everything belongs to him. Therefore, we should not have our ego also. That this belongs to me, this belongs to me. In reality, he is the one who created us, who created everything in creation. Ultimately, he is the master of everything. And at the same time, he is Sakshi. Sakshi means, you can know from Bahasa Malaysia, witness. He is the observer of all the good, of all the evil, of all the beings in this world. So, the reason for observing is so that he can allocate the karma phalam. So, whatever good or bad we do, that's why we call Lord as omnipresent. He observes everything. He is a witness to everything. And then he says, I am Nivasha. Nivasha means the abode, the support of everything. How are we to understand this? Just like gold is the support of all ornaments, without gold there can be no ornaments. Just like ocean is the support of all waves, God is the support of the whole creation. Without God there can be no creation. So we are created from Him, we are supported by Him, and at dissolution we go back to Him also. So therefore, He is Nivasha. Saranam. Saranam means refuge. So refuge means what? When you become helpless, just like Arjuna on the battleground, totally helpless, nothing could help him. What is the ultimate refuge? Took refuge in Krishna, in God. So he is the ultimate refuge. When everything, even sometimes we have money, even money cannot solve all our problems. We have relatives cannot solve our problems. Friend cannot solve our problems. Where is the ultimate refuge? God is the ultimate refuge. When nobody comes to your help, only one person is always there for you. God is there. So that's why he says, I'm Saranam. Therefore, we remember the stories of Draupadi when she was being disrobed in the court of the in Hastinapura. Who was the ultimate refuge? She cried for everybody. The husbands were there. Bhishma Pita was there. Everybody was there. Nobody raised a finger to help her. But ultimately, who came? Krishna came. Prahlad. Prahlad was there singing the glories of God. His father wanted to kill him. Ultimately, nobody came to his help. Ultimately, who came to his help? Lord in the form of Narasimha. So, he says, I am the Saranam, the refuge. I am always there as your ultimate refuge. But the problem is what? We don't seek Him. We try to find refuge in everything else except seek refuge in God. But He says, I am always there for you. And what type? I am also Suhrit. Very important word is Suhrit means what? Friend. But you see, I also got a lot of friends. Why is God my friend? I got so many other friends. So what's so special about God as a friend? He doesn't take sides. Neutral. What makes God a real special friend? Yeah, so how does God become your best friend? In fact, who is your best friend? How do you define a best friend? Someone who supports you.
Companion.
Stands by you through thick and thin. Who's the best friend? Is the one
you through, even through whatever you do, good or bad.
He's the one who stands with you through good or bad, but does not expect anything back in return. Isn't it? So anybody can stand through you thick and thin, but then they will remind you, you know, when you were down, you know, I helped you. So that's why God is the most special friend, Sukrit. He answers your prayers. Actually, he does not expect anything back also. It is not necessary that you have to offer him something back. So Sukrit is that type of friend who does not expect any repayment, and yet he is always there for you. That is a true friend, not who does something for you conditionally, who helps you unconditionally. So all you have to do is have faith and ask for help. Prabhava pralaya sthanam. I am the prabhava, that is the origin. I am the pralaya, the destruction, and I am the sthanam, the continuation also. So all three I am. In everything that we see in creation, whatever is being created, whatever is being supported now in creation, whatever is destroyed also, everything the ultimately goes back to God also. So I am the origin, the destruction, and the continuation of all creation. Nidanam. Nidanam means I am the storehouse of everything in creation. Meaning what? Not only everything moving, but also not moving. Stationary and not stationary. And not only that, when he says I am the storehouse, which means everything that is happening now, any new ideas we have, any new actions we do, everything already existed in seed form in God. So actually nothing is created, everything has already been in existence. So whatever new creations come about, whatever new thoughts come about, actually nothing new is there. It is everything has already existed in seed form in God. So he says, I am the Nidanam, the store. Everything exists in subtle form. Avyayam Bijam. Bijam means seed. Avyayam means imperishable seed. So there's a difference, because other seeds can only produce one time. Whereas Lord says, I am the imperishable seed from where the whole universe of infinite things came from. And this same seed keeps on producing and producing and producing. There is endless, what we call the endless seed. And that's why we say our creation in our tradition is represented as a cycle, never as a linear. Because the creation keeps on going on and on and on. Hence Lord says, I am the imperishable seed. Now, verse number 19 comes to a very practical aspect of God in the creation. Now, generally, when it is hot, what do? We complain. When it rains too much, we complain. But now look at what he's saying here. He's saying, Aham tapami. I am the one giving the heat. I am the total giver of heat. The sun, Surya Bhagwan is who? No other than God himself. I am giving the heat as the very power of the sun. So Surya Bhagavan, that's why we offer prayers. I mean, in those ancient times, they used to do what they call Sandhya Vandanam, to worship the sun three times a day. When in the morning when it is rising, the second time in the afternoon when it is at the highest peak, and the third time in the evening as it is setting. So we worship the sun as a glorification of Lord. And therefore sun also is considered as a giver of life. So Krishna says, I am the one giving heat. So next time when it is hot, how should you look upon it? Don't complain. It is the Lord blessing you. I am giving you the heat. Aham tapami. So don't switch on the aircon. Aham tapami. I give the heat.
The aircon is also given by
him. Yeah, correct. You're right. Very good. In the aircon also you see God. And what exactly, actually the sun also gives the heat. It plays another role, which he says here. Nigraham Varsham Utsrajami. When the sun gives the heat, it sucks up all the waters from the earth. And then what happens when the water is sucked up? It comes down as rain. So there is a purpose also for the heat. The heat is provided so that the waters of the world can be sucked up from rivers, from oceans, from lakes, and that same water comes down again as Varsham. Varsham means rain. So one of the seasons in India is called Varsham, the rainy season, they call it Varsham. So all these things that come and go, heat, rain, cold, are nothing but the manifestations of God. In through this experience of heat, cold and rain also, we should learn to experience the very presence, the very manifestation of God. That's why in every little thing, this helps us to open up our understanding of where is Lord. He is everywhere around. We say we are not experiencing, I can't see. You know, one person went to Ramakrishna Paramahansa and he says, can you show me God? And Ramakrishna said, no problem, I'll show you God right now. So he said, okay. So the man sat in front of him and Ramakrishna pointed here. So the man looked there. Then he pointed here and the man looked here. Then he pointed here. He said, you're pointing here, there. I don't see God. Where is God? You keep pointing here, pointing there. Ramakrishna said, see again. Again he pointed here. So look, I don't see God. He pointed here, I look here, I don't see God. He said, you are fooling me, you are making a fool out of me. You say you are going to show me God, where is God? He said, don't look at where I am pointing. The very fact that my hand can move is indicates the presence of Lord. The very fact that your eyes can see my hand move indicates the presence of Lord. So Lord is not an object for us to realize. He is within us. So realize when I am speaking, when I can see, when I can hear, everything indicates what? The presence of that divinity in me. So how can you say that I am not experiencing God? In the sun you are experiencing God, in the rain you are experiencing God. You are experiencing God totally all the time. But the only problem is you don't realize it. So this is to bring up our level of understanding of God in this very creation also. So in the heat is there and the rain is there. And then he says, Amritam cha eva mrityu. Amritam, I am the nectar and also I am in death. That means I am the very essence. In life also I am there, in death also I am there. So mrityu, in death, I am the very same one who gives life. I am the very same one who takes away that life also. So that's why Yamaraj is there also. In terms of death also, he is there. Yamaraj is another representation of the very God or Ishvara. So I am the very essence, I am the life principle. In fact, in chapter 7, he told us the same thing. When he said, I am the very life-giving principle. And then later in chapter 11, he will tell Krishna, I am Kala, I am the Lord of death. I am the one responsible for all the soldiers dying on the field. So don't think that you are killing them. Actually, I am playing my role as Kala, the Lord of death on this battlefield. So everything, we think life and death is also not in our hands. Everything is in the hands of the Lord. And then he says, Sat, Asat, Aham. Sat means real, Asat means unreal. So what is the difference now here? When he says real also I am, unreal also I am. Now, Sat here refers to the unmanifest creation. Before the world was created, it already existed in seed form. So there was creation before. Everything existed, which is non-changing. The Lord in His non-changing existence is there. But the thing is, because He is not manifest, because we do not realize Him. So just because we do not realize Him doesn't mean He is not there. He is there all the time. Sat means the existence of Lord throughout all periods of time. Through past, present and future, He is the changeless existence. Just like the cinema screen. The white cinema screen is there all the time. On the cinema screen, the projection is going on. When the things are being projected, the screen is there. When the projector is off, the screen also remains. So that is Sat, unmanifest creation. Asat is what? Asat is the manifest creation. So Lord says both I am. I am in unmanifest and I am also in the manifest creation. So para prakriti also is from Lord. Apara prakriti also is from Lord also. Right? Now, so in these four verses he has given us all the some examples of where he exists in creation. Later on in chapter 10 and 11, we will see a more elaborate list of his presence in this creation. Now, so that topic has ended up to verse number 19. In verse number 20 now, Krishna is going to start a new topic from verse number 20 to verse number 29. And what is this topic? Basically, again, you must understand chapter 9 is a mirror of chapter 7. So what was said unfinished is being expanded in chapter 9. In chapter 7 also, Lord Krishna spoke about the two types of bhaktas. The Sakama Bhakta, who worships Lord because of desires, worldly desires, and the Nishkama Bhakta, who worships Lord only to attain Lord. So in verses 20 to 29 now, Krishna will talk again about these two types of bhakti. Sakama Bhakti, where a person seeks material ends, artha or kama. And this type of bhakti can give you all types of happiness, all types of security, all types of pleasure, when you seek the world for possessions and for desires. Then he will also talk about Nishkama Bhakti, one who is not interested in artha and kama, but he is understood. Now, why is the devotee not interested in artha and kama? Why does such a devotee come to Nishkama Bhakti? Why would any devotee want to come to Nishkama Bhakti? So until you come to the realization that whatever the world offers you is only finite, until you understand that and come to realize that, then only you will change your direction of seeking. Until you don't wake up to that realization that the world can only offer you limited happiness, limited security, you will never come to Nishkama Bhakti. So one who has understood the limitations of the world, and this bhakta therefore has only one goal, and that is moksha. So now here Krishna will speak about both of these type of devotees. So first, in verses 20 and 21, he wants to talk about Sakama Bhakti. What happens to those people who worship God for material ends? Now, what is the basic difference between Sakama and Nishkama Bhakti? It is not that different devotees do different type of prayers. You do the same prayers, you do the same rituals, you go on pilgrimage, you go to temple, everything you do the same. What is the difference? The motive. The motive of what you want to achieve through your prayers. So that's why sometimes people mistake when I say, you know, you do prayers for this, for worldly ends, then they say, should I not pray? No, pray. But what should you pray for? Pray for moksha, pray for purity of mind, pray for guru, pray for scriptures, pray for what you call knowledge, pray for these kind of things. That is called Nishkama Bhakti, where your desire is not for worldly ends, or at the least, pray for others, sarve bhavantu sukhina. That is selfless prayer. So I'm not saying don't go to temple, don't go on pilgrimage, by all means do that, but question the motive of your bhakti. Okay, so now, who is a Sakama Bhakta? Who is a desire-orientated Bhakta? He or she wants material gains and even up to Swarga Loka also. Now, although we may not perform elaborate rituals to seek heaven, but even through our prayers also, simple prayers, we keep on asking for worldly things. So these are the type of people, although Krishna is describing these people who perform elaborate prayers just to reach heaven, we must understand this also refers to our own prayers. We may do simple prayer, a 2-minute prayer, but we ask for worldly things. The result is one and the same. So what does he say? Here, Traividya Mama, Traividya Soma Papa, Yakmir Mam Ishtva. Mam Ishtva means they worship me. How do they worship me? Traividya refers to the three Vedas which we discussed just now. The Sama Veda, Yajur Veda, and the Rig Veda. Now these three Vedas, Traividya refers to the three Vedas that contains all kinds of rituals, and one of the rituals there is called Somapa. Somapa is a kind of a plant by which when you perform this ritual, you take this Somapa plant and you drink the juice of the Somapa plant, or you offer it into the oblation. And it is said that if you drink the Somapa juice or offer it as an oblation, you are guaranteed a place in heaven, Swarga Loka. So it is written in our Vedas, it is there in the Vedas. So here he says, these people, they worship me by using all these materials. So as I said, it's the same thing. We just replace this. We may not use the soma plant, but same rituals we do with the intention is to attain worldly goals. The result is the same. So what happens? These great devotees of mine, they have knowledge. It's not that the devotees of God don't have knowledge, but their knowledge is only at the level of the rituals. So they perform all these rituals. What is the purpose? Now, Puta Papa means sins. Puta Papa means they purify themselves of all the sins. Now what it means here is that they try to remove all the obstacles that will take them to heaven. So whatever obstacles are there, through these prayers they try to remove all the type of obstacles, all the barriers to their heaven. And what happens, you say, as a result of these prayers, Swargatim, if you look at the second line, Swargatim Prarthayante. They Prarthayante means they pray. What do they pray for? Swargatim. Gati means to attain Swarga. Their main purpose is to pray for the goal or the destination of Swarga. Why? Because they are full of desires. They want to satisfy their desires. Now, of course, when we say Swarga, it also means desires, worldly desires also. But it can go as high as Swarga also. So now, if you have asked for those kind of desires, you pray for those kind of desires, you follow the rituals according to the scriptures, what happens? He says, Te Surendra Lokam Asadhya. Asadhya means they will acquire what? Surendra Lokam, the Loka which is Surendra, beautiful Loka, Indra Loka, the most beautiful of all Lokas, the world of Lord Indra. And as a result of the prayers, they have accumulated sufficient punyam, and thus they enjoy asnanti, they enjoy divyan deva bhogan. Deva bhogan means the pleasures which are enjoyed by the devas in heaven. You will get a chance to enjoy those unlimited pleasures, untold pleasures, unimagined pleasures. Whatever you can get on earth, you multiply that by 100 times or 1,000 times. That kind of pleasures which are available in heaven also. So it's a beautiful place.
You not moksha.
Huh? No, it's not moksha. That part is coming. The good news first, then the bad news. So
one
first.
Question,
huh? Yes.
I think one clarification actually.
Yeah.
People normally they say that
soma plant. Yeah. Yeah.
People often talk about the liquor.
Yes, it's intoxicating also. It has some intoxicating power also. But it's from the soma plant, soma juice. Not easy to find, don't go looking for it. Okay. So what happens now? They enjoy all these great pleasures in heaven. Whatever you can imagine and beyond your imagination also, everything is there. The same type of pleasures that the devas enjoy, you will enjoy. So now it looks like all of you have made a wrong choice. Isn't it? Why? All the great pleasures you have given up for what? Huh. So haven't you made a wrong decision? See, looks like those fellows have made the right decision, because they are the ones enjoying in heaven. The greatest pleasures they enjoy. So now, yeah, of course, they have to come back. They have to come back. So now let us see what happens in the next verse. Yes, yes. Okay.
Just now, you say God is karma phala karma.
Yeah.
That means he allocates
according to your karmas. Right.
Then, let's say I'm a very bad person.
Right.
All the bad people.
Right.
Then I'm going to do all these
prayers and rituals.
Prayers and rituals and everything.
Right.
And it seems here I can get what I want.
Correct.
So, it doesn't seem to balance.
Okay. Very good question. So, we have a bad person here, does a lot of wrong things, and then comes across these rituals that say that can guarantee you a place in heaven. So, you go and do all these rituals. Okay? Now, as a result of these rituals, you have to be given a place in heaven, because that is the law. You follow the ritual, you follow the rules and regulations. So, you get. But, do you escape the bad karmas?
No.
So, what happens when you come back now? So you have to pay back for those bad karmas
again.
No. So now, okay, very good question. The question is, how do you know you get a human form to do rituals? Because of those bad karmas, you may be given an animal or insect or other form, which means you can't do this ritual, which means you have to suffer again for those particular karmas until you slowly come up again to the human birth. And then depends on you what you do again. If those same desires are in you, again you go back and do the rituals, again you go to heaven. But the bad things you do, you will have to come back. That's why it says the credit, the merit you get by going to heaven. But now what happens the next verse here?
How do you dissolve those sins? You will never get to heaven.
How do you dissolve
the bad things that you have done in life?
Right.
You will never be able to be forgiven.
See, okay, now you have the bad things that you have done, right? You come back. Now, whatever experiences that you are undergoing in life, those trials and tribulations, that is what is helping us to exhaust the bad deeds, the past bad actions. Therefore, if until one comes to the realization that I want to change the direction of my life, you will keep on doing the same things. So that's why it's important to come to devotion and then come to knowledge. At least with devotion for God, we change our way of living. Then when we come to knowledge, we understand that what we are doing is wrong, we want to change our actions. So all the trials and tribulations we go through are helping us burn up the bad karmas.
So they do get burned.
Of course, yes, of course. Because whatever adverse situations you go through, whatever physical problem, mental problem, are basically exhausting your bad karma. So therefore, when you are going through bad karmas or bad experience, you should not be depressed. Why? Because you are exhausting your bad karma. If you are also going through a lot of good times, you better not get excited. Because? Why? You are exhausting your good karmas also. That also is going on also. So therefore, he says, be equal minded. Understand, everything good and bad will come at his own time and go. So be balanced, well balanced. Your mind must be focused on your goal of life.
So if a bad person comes to a realization that he's been bad,
right,
and then starts praying for moksha and knowledge and all the
right,
things,
right,
then he can escape the cycle?
Again, depends. The prarabdha karmas cannot escape. What he has been born with, he has to exhaust it in this life. But what he can escape is the sanchitta karmas.
So he doesn't create any more bad karmas.
He doesn't create, number one, he doesn't create new bad karmas. That means agami karmas are gone. He still suffers the prarabdha karmas which he is born with in this life, and sanchita karmas are burned away by God, the grace of God. So that's when we reach, that is the state of moksha basically. Okay, now what happens to this person who's gone to heaven in verse number 21? He says, Te tam vishalam swarga lokam bhuktva. Bhuktva, having enjoyed all the vishalam, means the vast pleasures of heaven, swarga loka. And why is heaven called vast? Here is saying the vast pleasures of heaven. Heaven is described as vishalam, very vast. All the righteous deeds performed with desires, they are now rewarded to you with heavenly pleasures. And therefore he says this heaven is vishalam. Vishalam means number one, it is vast in size, because since we have different desires, there are different colonies in heaven. Just like in earth, you have like KLCC, you know, high-class colony. Then you have, you know, some other colonies which are not so high-class. So depending on your level of desires, there are vast areas in heaven where you can be sent. Number one. Number two, vast in terms of the type of desires, unimagined desires. So that's why heaven is described as vishalam, vast. In terms of size, in terms of available pleasures. Now that is the good news. Now, therefore, the question is asked, why are these people in Swarga Loka? Why are they in Swarga Loka? Because of the punyam they have earned through the performance of righteous actions. So, the actions are limited, therefore the punyam is limited, therefore the time in heaven is also limited. Like you apply for a visa, they give you 2 weeks visa, and then if you, of course in the world you can extend your visa, but in heaven you cannot extend. So the immigration from visa department in heaven comes there, and what does he do? Now he deports you back to where? Back. So, punyam is exhausted, and then you come back again to where? He says, punye shine. When the shine means exhaustion, upon exhaustion of all your punyas, you come back to what? Vishanti, you enter what? Martya Lokam. This is Martya Lokam. This is the mortal world where there is birth, there is death. There is a cycle of birth and death. Whereas in heaven, no cycle of birth and death. In hell, no cycle of birth and death. You just finish your term and you come back here again. So, when your punyas are all exhausted, you come back to Martya Lokam. Yeah, your holiday visa expire, no more money, you come back here already. So, now, the question is, you come back and as the lady asked, since you have all these accumulated bad karmas now, you have to come back and pay for that.
So, it looks like doing punyam is also bad.
Punyam with what kind of motive? See, I do good, I give charity, I do dhanam, I go to temple, but what is my motive? If I do punyam, if my motive is to attain God, then you don't go to Swarga Loka anymore. Then you go direct to God. So that's why the motive is very important. You don't need to change your prayers, you don't need to change any spiritual activity, just change your motive. That's the only difference. Yes?
Since we are doing the shuffling, going up and down, according to Dharma, why are we doing this prayers to the dead for our ancestors and all? We are in their own shuffling.
Correct.
Why are we doing it?
Okay, it is also our duty, one of the five Pancha Mahayajnas, that whatever we can help them on to get moksha, it is also our duty also to help them and to also receive their blessings also.
We help them. Whatever they are receiving is based on their own life.
Correct. Whatever prayers we do also helps maybe to soften the blow. See, whatever we can do, every action that we do carries a reaction. So whatever good prayers we do also carry some benefit for them also. Now, also you must imagine one thing. Some people have died maybe without doing the proper prayers, number one. Or some people have died in an accident when they couldn't do the certain prayers that they wanted to do. So whatever prayers you do also help those people, your past ancestors also. And it is part of our five Pancha Mahayajnas that we should not neglect Pitra Yajna, that is offering to our ancestors also.
But if they are reborn already, because they must be died.
Yeah.
They would have.
Generally, what we can only pray is for the last three generations, the last three before us. So that's why if you see the priests also, when they do the prayers, they make three separate bodies. That is your past three generations. Right? So what we can do is offer our prayers for them and at least help them along the way with that good intentions. Right?
Actually, you are doing this yourself. See,
no, good intentions to help them, not help yourself.
But it will help you also because you have to help.
Yes, of course.
Most of us do, because the guy says, help you, your ancestors, bless you.
Again, come back to your motive. So, am I doing it because I want blessings from them or am I doing it as a duty? You see, again, come back to your motive. Am I doing this prayer as my duty, what I should do? When I say duty means what? I should not expect anything back because it's my duty. But if I do it with expectation, then oh, definitely you will get that expectation. You will get back what you want also.
It's also written in the Vedas, right?
Huh?
It's also written in the Vedas that you have to pray for your ancestors and all.
Correct. The ritual is there. Now the question is, what is your motive? Yeah, you said.
After this chapter, when you go to temple, you start saying, you know, all the while they've been praying for this.
Correct. Yeah.
And now.
No, it is not wrong if you have some requirements to ask. There's nothing wrong. But the question is how long you want to go on in the same mode of prayer. So at some point you got to come to that realization where you want to move on. That you just want to stop, keep on asking for things and asking and just totally surrender everything to the Lord and say, from now onwards you look after me. I'm not going to ask you anything. But it is going to take some time to come to that realization. So that's why in chapter 6 or so Krishna says, Saner, Saner, Uparamit. Whatever you do, slowly, slowly, slowly. Don't make drastic changes in your life. You know, step by step by step, every little aspect try to change. Right? So until and unless we come to that situation where we can surrender totally to Lord, then we go to temple, we just don't know what to ask Him anymore already. Right? Least as least, pray for others. Sarve bhavantu sukhina. You don't know what to ask, at least pray for others. So now you come back to this Martya Lokam. And why does he call it Martya Lokam? No doubt there is death, but there is another purpose. Why he calls it Martya Lokam? No doubt there is death on this world, but what is the reason he is calling it Martya Lokam? Alright, there is death and birth and death and birth, but there is a deeper reason why he calls this Martya Lokam. See, death brings what? Sorrow. Isn't it? Death is the most painful experience, it brings sorrow. In heaven, do you have any sorrows? No sorrows at all. No bills to pay. Right? No electricity bill, water bill, all the time enjoying everything free. When you come back here, all the problems come back again. So imagine you've been having such a beautiful time in heaven. You come back again and you meet all the sorrowful experiences. How painful is going to be. And yet if you don't come out of it again, you come back with all your desires again, you restart the whole cycle again. That temporary happiness and come back again to this world of sorrows.
The problem, brother, we are not aware we were. We were.
Yes, correct. Correct. That's why only knowledge will awaken us to that. What have we been doing all our lives, you know? It's only knowledge that all the while we've been praying for this, praying for that. But ultimately, what we want is that infinite pleasure. So there was one very nice video clip, I think Sister Uri said, about Sri Sri Ravi. You know? Remember the video clip? Where the student, there was a group of students, they were questioning Sri Sri, what is his name? Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, right? And one of the students got up and asked him a question. Sir, if we don't remember in our next life all the bad things we did in this life, why should we then change our life? Because we are not going to remember. All the bad things we did, we come back the next life, you'll never remember what we did in the last life. So why should we even do good things? So the simple reply he gave, he asked the student, do you remember what you had for breakfast last year? He said, I cannot remember. Then why do you eat breakfast? You eat breakfast, why? So that you have a healthy body. So why do we do good actions? Because we want to make a good future for ourselves. So until we come to that realization that what is our motive, what have we been praying, what dhanam we've been giving, with what motive. In fact, chapter 7, he says, prayer has got sattvic prayer, rajasic prayer, tamasic prayer. Dhanam has got sattvic dhanam, there's rajasic dhanam, there's tamasic dhanam. So even our spiritual activities can be divided into three categories. Sattvic, rajasic, tamasic. Sattvic will uplift you, rajasic will keep you bound in this world, and tamasic will drive you downwards. So all our spiritual activities, all we need to realize is change our attitude, change our motive, that's all. That will create a difference in your life. Okay? So now, he has told us that this is basically what happens, and therefore, the problem is we never learn. So what he says here, that we keep coming back and forth. Evam, trai dharmam, anuprapamana. Trayi Dharma means all the rites and rituals which we have followed in the three Vedas. Anuprapanna means we follow. And why do we follow? Because of kama, because of all our desires, with the aim of all the worldly pleasures. One Swamiji gave a simple example. He said, he gave a simple story to explain. He said, supposing there is a dog and you show the dog a bone. Now what happens when you show the dog a bone? The dog would wag his tail, come very happily to you. As a dog is coming very happily to you and eyeing the bone and shaking, is wagging his tail, as he's near you, what do? You take out a stick and whack the fella. What happens? He gets angry, he howls, he runs away to a distance, right? At a distance, he sits there, he growls at you. Then what do? You take out the bone and show him again. What happens to the dog? Again he comes, wagging his tail. When he reaches near you again, you take out a stick, you whack him again. What happens? He runs back again, at a distance he sits and watches you. Isn't that what we have been doing also? Right? Chasing after desires, desires hit us. What we do? We run to one area, we cry, again we see another desire, we run again after that. We never learn our lesson. That's exactly the same thing that's been happening. A very simple explanation. You keep showing the bone, the dog will come. Every time we are chasing these bones and we are getting whacked. Chasing the bones and we are getting whacked. And this is exactly what is happening. Calm. Exactly. So until you realize that bone is not your destination. Right?
Also like going to jail and coming out of jail, going back to jail.
Exactly, yeah.
What about young children? Young children, teenagers who are growing up.
Right.
How do they understand life in this perspective?
This is where this is where why our scriptures are there, why the parents are there to guide them in the initial years when their intellect is not strong. And this foundation should be laid because especially a lot of our teenagers are going overseas. So once they go overseas, you lose total contact with them, you're unable to supervise them. But if they carry these values from their young age, like what they are doing with Bal Vikas classes and the Chinmaya group is doing and Gita Ashram is doing, and then you see that these students grow up with some kind of spiritual foundation. So until their own intellect starts working, maybe at the age of early 20s, 30s and all that, then they are able to stand on their own. And that's why the parents play a very important role in the early development of the child also. To set good examples to them, to make sure they understand the basics of the scriptures, they learn to recite certain mantras and understand. But this is the problem because, again, we engage them in a lot of rituals but we don't explain to them. And nowadays they don't want to accept because everything they ask, why do this, why? And we ourselves cannot explain to them. So they get more confused. So we have to play a very important role to equip ourselves with knowledge and then we can guide them in the early years when their intellect is weak.
But on the other hand, people like me, for example, now there is a
That's what everybody says. They say, I wish I'd come to this knowledge 5 years ago or 10 years ago, but it's never too late.
40 years ago would have been better.
It's never too late because we are very fortunate. We have next birth. So better luck next birth. We'll come back.
No, the problem is we pass on also this dependence on rituals for our children. And now it's difficult to. Because they have become disillusioned with these rituals.
It's true.
And they especially like you say, when they are important adults, they have actually become disillusioned with what they are doing.
And the question is, when they ask God, why are you doing this? Mm. What's the meaning of it? Mm.
That's why we need to change our system to get them knowledge based. Rituals are important, but it should be added together with knowledge. Once rituals and knowledge are there, that will really fortify them. So all this Sai Baba mission, Chinmaya mission, Gita Ashram, this is basically what they are doing. Giving the knowledge to the children at a very young age and equipping them with knowledge.
To teach them totality. Harana, I mean,
slowly, step by step, step by step. Yeah, you start them with rituals, you start them with mantras, and slowly bring them. Don't
understand
straight away tell them that God is unmanifest. It's very difficult for them to understand.
God in totality.
Yeah, yeah. Totally, slowly, step by step. Yeah.
The problem was our parents didn't have access to the knowledge.
Yes. And that's why they also engage us in rituals, and we also followed and did rituals. Same, I also come from the same. I was just dragged to from temple to temple to ritual to ritual. I don't know what I was doing.
People like us, we rejected the ritual.
Oh, is it? You rejected the ritual.
And we have gone from temple to temple, and they have a different culture where they almost atheist.
Right.
They rejected this. Now to bring them back to this knowledge, now we are getting this knowledge. To bring them back is really.
You're talking about the truth, the children.
I'm talking about, you know,
adults also.
Adults.
Okay, okay. Yeah, I mean, it is happening.
After being disillusioned by rituals, they come to my knowledge. So they can. Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
but
it is.
Those who go around pilgrimages and they chant Ram and all that.
Yeah.
What are the benefits?
Again, what's your motive? Every prayer, every ritual, what is your motive? Question your motive. What do you want from that? Do you want, again, worldly pleasures from your pilgrimage? That's what you'll get.
No.
So whatever is your motive will be the outcome. Doing rituals, doing prayers, all is good. One should not avoid it, but just question your motive. Why are you doing it? That's it.
I want moksha. Isn't that selfish?
Yes.
It's
correct. It's a desire, but it's a good desire. Number one. Number two, then you reach a stage whereby you say, I will surrender that to you, Lord. Correct? So at the initial stage, yes, that burning desire must be there to take you in the right direction. But then you reach a stage where you say, even that also I surrender to you, Lord. When I get moksha, it's up to you. I hand that over to you also. That desire also goes away. Yes, you are saying something?
No, I said that each one of us, even if we could be in a family, each of us are in our own journey. Life experiences
and whatever we go through, it's going to shape our goals. Correct. So you don't have to worry so much about the children. They will themselves also find the way. Just expose them to the spiritual. You do your work, you do your duty, try to expose them as much as you can to religion. And also set a good example to them also. Yeah. It is the bad habits we have that also we pass on to them also. Okay, so kama kama, with the pure aim of sensory enjoyment. This word kama kama, full of desires, repeated two times. Kama kama. Kama is desires, but it is repeated here two times. So because of these intense desires, you do all types of rituals which are explained in the Vedas. And thus what happens? Gata agatam labante. Come and go, come and go. Going, gata agatam, going, returning, going, returning. Labante, this is the path that you will attain of constantly coming and going and coming and going. So, again, as you come back, there is no guarantee in what form you are going to come back. Depending on your past karmas, it will determine what type of form or life you get here. And this is basically what we have been going through year after year after year. So now, having explained this type of devotee, who is who? The Sakama Bhakta, who worships with desire in verses 20 and 21. From next verse onwards, Krishna will discuss about the different type of devotee, that devotee who is a Nishkama Bhakta, who worships God only to attain God. And some of the very beautiful verses we will find here, especially like verse 26, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam, one of the very famous verses in the Gita. And this verse 22 is said to be the heart of the Gita. Now initially when I read somewhere, they said this is the center of the Gita. It does not mean that it is the, how you say, out of the 700 verses, this is not the 350th verse. It's not the center. When it means center, means the very heart of the Gita. So this is a very, very special verse, verse 22. Very often quoted verse, which is here, verse 22, which is, don't follow verse 20 and 21, please. Which is supposed to be the very heart of the Gita. A very important verse. We can understand and we can apply this in our lives. That is the real essence of the Gita. So we will come back next week and discuss this verse from 22 onwards. And then there's also a very controversial verse, which is in verse number 32, which deals with women, Vaishyas and Sudras. So also sometimes very confusing this verse and a very controversial verse, we will understand this verse also. Okay, so we will end with a prayer. Vasudeva sutam devam kansa chanura mardanam devaki paramanandam krishnam vande jagat guru. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Very good. Yeah.